Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante, along with Zach Sako. Zach, how are we doing this week?
Doing great. Penn State's 2-0 and survives a Bowling Green upset attempt.
1-0 for the week. That's what we know, right? Win and survive. Win in advance. Before we get started, Zach, how about letting our listeners know where they can find your podcast?
Well, Jim, I appreciate that. Locked On Nittany Lions on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts, daily podcasts around your favorite Penn State sports teams.
And I'm sure you get a lot of feedback, as do I. This Bowling Green game, oh my goodness, what in the world happened to the Penn State defense in the first half of that game?
I mean, that's just it. It was the first half was bad. The second half was actually pretty good. Bowling Green had a late field goal, but for the most of the second half, they were shut out. And Penn State, for better or for worse, got out-coached. I think that Tom Allen and the defense didn't have its best game plan together. I think there was a lack of execution as well. KJ Winston gets hurt in the first quarter too, so you lose one of your best players. You know, Abdul Carter, KJ Winston are your two best overall defenders on this team, and you lose one of them. That's going to change some things. Bowling Green is actually a really good team. MAC conference, that's one thing, but I think that's a team that is going to win the conference title. They're well coached. That's not a new system. Mike Leffler, who played quarterback for Michigan in the mid-90s, has been coach there now, head coach now for 5 years at Bowling Green. 30-plus seniors, they weren't afraid of Penn State. They're not a pushover type of team. So all of those things kind of combined together. The season opener, the home opener anyway, doesn't have as much juice, if you will, as the home opener. West Virginia, talking a lot of smack, the opportunity to go to Morgantown, retain the bragging rights for a regional rivalry. And then it's some school out of Ohio called Bowling Green. I mean, that's just, right? That's just kind of the fact of it. So all those things combined together. And then Penn State ultimately wakes up in the second half and avoids the upset that Notre Dame did not.
Well, putting from the angle of Bowling Green and what they were able to accomplish, I thought it was also Connor Bazelak played a wonderful game, and I think there's something to be said for this is a guy who I believe started out at Missouri, Southeast Conference school, made his way to Indiana, a Big Ten school. He's a veteran. He's been around. He's not going to get rattled in front of a big crowd at Penn State, and let's face it, he executed. I don't care how short the passes are. He was, 16 of 20, 80% in the first half. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty good performance there also.
It helps when you have a player like Harold Fannin Jr., who is, I think he does have a future in the NFL and maybe could be a potential starter one day down the road. I think he's a developmental prospect because he originally wasn't recruited as a tight end, yet has now become a headache for defense and clearly poses a threat for not only a Penn State defense, but anybody else. And then from Penn State's side of things, if you face another athletic tight end or a big build wide receiver like that, how is Penn State going to adjust? So you get that element of it. But Bazelak was very efficient, as you mentioned. It was a well-coached, well-called game plan offensively, but they could not do the same things in the second half. Harold Fannin Jr. was almost non-existent. They like to rely on a running back like Tarion Stewart, and Penn State took that away, and that was without KJ Winston for the entirety of the second half. So kudos to Penn State for making the necessary adjustments and all but shutting out Kent State in the second half, because that's, I think, what really mattered at the end of the day. But it is going to look bad when you look at it from the simplified view of, that was a MAC team. That's your home opener. You're supposed to be a college football playoff team. When in reality, Bowling Green is just really good, and there was that element of a letdown for Penn State. All of those things were true, and Tom Allen was out-coached in the first half, but made the necessary adjustments in the second half.
Well, I think the thing is, this is going on throughout the country. We saw Oregon with a close call, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, Kansas State against Tulane, Alabama against South Florida. A lot of close calls. And as you mentioned, Notre Dame didn't get away with it. They didn't have the win and survive.
Part of that has to do with game plan, too. You play USC, Ohio State, Wisconsin, Washington, all back to back to back to back. There are bigger fish to fry in the scheme of things. And Bowling Green's going to come in with the mentality of, we can be a wrecking ball. This game actually, if Bowling Green beats Penn State, a win to them does not matter as much as a loss matters to Penn State, hypothetically speaking. So Penn State's going it from the frame of mind of, okay, this is Bowling Green, we should beat them, we're able to just out-talent them, we have all of the resources that Bowling Green does not as a football program, just in general. They're better in every category you can find. But Penn State understands that this is a 12-game season. They don't have to go 12-0, but they would like to. They would like to go 11-1. And so you have to be strategic with what plays, what game plans you're putting together week in and week out. Do you really want to put on tape what you show against Bowling Green for USC, Ohio State? It's a 12-week game of chess. Whereas Bowling Green knows, we can go in and play spoiler because a loss to Penn State doesn't change our season. Sure, they could maybe battle for that one Group 5 spot in the college football playoff, but I think their intentions, their realistic goals are to get to the conference championship, win, and then make some noise in a high-end bowl game. That's what Bowling Green's intentions are. So they don't need that win against Penn State because that doesn't affect their conference record and that doesn't get them into the MAC conference championship. Whereas Penn State, yes, you need to win that game to remain as for undefeated as long as possible, but if you lose that game, that almost all but ruins your season.
Well, some of this, let me relay some of the things that I've been getting feedback from our listeners. And One of the questions was, well, gee, understand going in with a vanilla defense. This is Bowling Green. We feel pretty good with just going vanilla. We should be fine. But after they march right down the field once, then twice, isn't it time to make some of those adjustments right away and not wait till halftime?
I don't think it's a matter of waiting. I mean, you actually have time to, because there's only so much time in between drives. You have a 20 to 25 minute period where you can sit down with the players and go through the X's and O's. And it's tougher to do that on the sideline than it is. That's why they call it halftime adjustments, because you have the chance to go to the locker room, sit down with a clipboard and say, okay, here's what we're going to do. Here's what we're going to move. You're trying to find that maybe on the fly, but it's not necessarily working. You also have to see it. And it kept happening. Bowling Green, okay, they had a successful drive once, and then they had it twice, and then they had it three times. So they eventually showed, okay, this is what is working for them. How can we take that away? So it's not a perfect scheme by any stretch of the imagination. Yes, ideally, would you like that to happen sooner rather than later? Of course. But that's the difference between good football teams, great football teams, is that you don't let it keep happening and keep happening. So better late than never in Penn State's case, and it led to a victory. Can't say the same for the Fighting Irish, but I get the point that, yes, it would have been nice to have these adjustments made in the second quarter, but easier said than done.
All right. One element that I was personally concerned about was the tackling. Now, I've had, again, some of the listener feedback was, that's on the coaches. Well, there wasn't a problem with tackling in game one against West Virginia. I hardly think the coaches were coaching them not to tackle well in this game, okay?
Yes.
But do you think of that as a, you know what, they're coming off an emotional win on the road at West Virginia, a lot of talk, turned into a rivalry game, a big game with a lot of national interest. Was this some of the sloppy tackling? Was it just a letdown? Or do you think it's an issue that could come back to bite them as the season goes on?
I think there was just an element of there's not a lot of juice here for Penn State. In that West Virginia game, it's a little different. Again, Bowling Green didn't spend weeks, months, almost a year, saying that they were going, the fan base and players saying select quotes that implied that, you know, hey, Penn State doesn't really care about this game, right? There wasn't this national spotlight to it. And as a college athlete, you're going to want to prove the naysayers, the doubters wrong. Whereas that element wasn't in existence here at Bowling Green. You can just have an off day. The tackling issues weren't there in the second half. I just think Penn State, noon game, yeah, it was the home opener, but it did not have the same kind of dynamic that a West Virginia game had with that crowd, that hostile environment going into that, you know, getting the fans, the crowd out of it early in the game. It's just kind of the different dynamic here of which one are you circling on your schedule? A regional matchup where, yeah, there are a lot of implications on the line versus, oh, this is a Group 5 school. How good can they actually be? We're all human. I think we're all guilty of it to an extent subconsciously of looking past somebody because, and again, that's just a well-coached team. Bowling Green, 30-plus seniors, well-coached, disciplined. They came in quietly to make sure that they gave Penn State a challenge on that Saturday. I don't have any concerns overall with the tackling. I think Bowling Green is a physical team and they're going to generate missed tackles. But Penn State has, it's not like Penn State's undersized or they're not going to be physically overmatched by teams down the road. They're either going to be on the same, they're going to be on the same level playing field, or they're going to be that much more physically intense than an opponent.
Okay, now a bye week is coming up this weekend. Nittany Lions are off, so they've got 2 weeks. How do they treat this now? If you're Tom Allen, if you're James Franklin, what is your approach?
I think you get healthy, right? KJ Winston left that game. You had Andrew Rapplier, who did not play in that game and is supposed to be the backup tight end. So you get Khalil Dinkins back, you lose Andrew Rapplier. So rest is important here. You have Kent State, so I don't want to try to frame it as you look past them, but you're not in a dire situation where you need all hands on deck to try to win and beat a Kent State team that is truly a bottom five team in the country. I'm not saying put it together a lackadaisical game plan, but just know that you have 2 weeks to work on the little things before you actually get back into Big Ten play, and that starts with the bye week. Rest up, get well, get right, and then start to, you know, hey, tackling, right? Blocking schemes, communication, X's and O's, all those things.
Very good. That's going to be it for quarter number one. When we come back, we're even going to talk a little bit about Penn State's offense. Stay tuned for that.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. I'm Jim. He's Zach. We are talking Penn State football. Following up on the Penn State victory over Bowling Green last Saturday, it was 34-27. A bit scary in the first half. Not a good performance by the defense, but as Zach pointed out, much improved in the second half. The one other concern, Zach, and we saw some of it also against West Virginia, though, was the penalties, and it bit them again this game. I'm not sure, how do you emphasize in practice, hey guys, don't jump off sides, don't hold? How do you attack that to get your team a little more disciplined?
I think there were some missed calls here and there. I don't know. I'm not trying to imply that the refs were against Penn State or one way or another, but you can't ignore the fact that there were missed calls in terms of what was judged as a penalty versus what wasn't judged as a penalty. I remember there was an offensive lineman on Bowling Green who grabbed the jersey of Jalen Reed from behind and pulled him out of the play, and that wasn't called. That was completely ignored. So that's just one example. There was Drew Shelton was called for a hold, and he just didn't hold, and it negated a Penn State pass play. There was the offensive pass interference by Amari Evans where he got an extension, and it's like, look, if it's a 50-50 play, if the defensive back is trying to, you know, make a play and work through the receiver, same thing, the receiver's trying to work through the defensive back, I say that it's a moot point, and unless it's completely egregious, it's a 50-50 ball and both players are trying to make a play. So for the penalties, yes, you want to stay disciplined because that's how you win football games. James Franklin has talked about the explosive plays are key. Winning the penalty battle and the turnover battles are key. So Penn State needs to continue to do what it wants to do in those three categories. Win the explosive play battle, which they are doing. They are so much better at explosive plays now with Andy Kotelnicki's system. Penalties, questionable at times, but yes, you shouldn't be putting yourself in a position to where you're getting called for penalties either. Okay, so yeah, Amari Evans might need to change something. Drew Shelton maybe needs to adjust a little bit of technique. But penalties can cost you if you're not careful.
I'm glad you explained the offensive pass interference that way. I've had some people who said both the West Virginia game where it was not called and this mm-hmm. game where he did get the offensive pass interference. I think what was common to both was the defender initiating the contact. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, you know, Amari Evans initiating the push. It was the defender initiating contact. But it appears the officials, it's almost as if they're trained. Everything's fair until you see the arm extension.
Yeah, and that's just something that Amari Evans has to be conscious of. I think there is an initiative both at the NFL and the college level to be more aware of offensive pass interferences, whether that's blocking too soon for a screenplay. And I think for the most part, referees have been a little they've been consistent with it, maybe a little too consistent at times because they're starting to split hairs in some cases. Football's a physical game. There's going to be blocks. There's going to be contested catches. Not everything's a defensive pass interference. Not everything's an offensive pass interference. Sometimes it's just really good coverage and there's contact downfield. Sometimes it's a great catch in traffic and it's a physical contested catch. So there's an art to this more than there is a science. If there's an egregious, there's a defensive back in coverage. He's trailing the wide receiver and the wide receiver extends both arms and pushes him away to make the catch. That is your textbook definition of offensive pass interference. I did not see that in the West Virginia game, and I did not see that in the Bowling Green game in the case of Amari Evans.
Let's talk about this offense in general and some of the positives from it. You already mentioned the explosive plays. I also think, and I'm going to be repeating myself because I talked about it last week, Drew Aller, I think the difference between Drew Aller last year, Drew Aller this year, is just there seems to be a confidence level to him. And then what comes out of that is the performance where he doesn't hesitate when he decides to take off and run with the ball. He seems a lot more confident in making his reads, making the passes on time when he's supposed to. It's not like the arm is any different than it was a year ago, but it just seems like there's a confidence to him, Zach.
I mean, that's just a positive consequence of changing offensive coordinators, because not only do you have just a better coach, Andy Kotelnicki is a better coach, and the way that the players respond, maybe, you know, I'm not trying to get critical of Mike Yurcich, but the players really resonate with Andy Kotelnicki, and you can see that anytime that we've been at practice or media day or anything else, Andy Kotelnicki is easy to approach, he's easy to communicate with, he doesn't, and it's not to say that Mike Yurcich isn't, but Andy Kotelnicki is. And I think that's what the players needed above all else, is somebody that's not... And again, this isn't because Mike Yurcich is or isn't any of these things, But Andy Kotelnicki is not a drill sergeant. Yes, it's work. Yes, it's a job. Yes, this is everybody's career. But there's almost an element of fun to it. So that's going to loosen you up as a young college athlete. There's not this tense overall pressure, time in and time out. There's a time for work, but at the same time, this is a game. This is a game, and people are supposed to, if you're not having fun, it's going to make it that much of a more of a tedious job rather than something that you do, you started out in and continue to do because you enjoy the mechanics of it. So Andy Kotelnicki helps in that regard. And then the actual X's and O's of it, he's calling plays. He's giving the confidence to Drew Aller to say that, I know you're a five-star quarterback. I know you have the arm talent. Let's design plays to maximize those abilities. I know that you can move within the pocket. I know that you can extend plays and get 7, 10, 15 yards if we need you. You are a dual-threat quarterback to an extent. Let's use that and create that. So it's all just a positive consequence of Andy Kotelnicki's demeanor and his decision-making as a coach. So yes, Drew Aller's just going to naturally benefit from that, and you're going to be more confident because you have the system and the coach that just naturally believe in you.
I agree with that, and I spent all last season saying, Zach, you run a read option where the option is for the quarterback to keep the ball and run. But if he never does that, it's not an option anymore. Already we've seen a couple plays. We saw a touchdown from Drew Aller when he chose to keep the ball. Yeah. And he's doing it confidently. I love that. I think that's a huge difference. Let's talk about the receivers. And week one, it was Trey Wallace was the guy. This week, it was Tyler Warren. I still get some feedback from people who are concerned. Oh, you didn't have Trey Wallace catch a pass. You have just one prime receiver a week. That can't work. It doesn't work. We've got this Julian Fleming comes in 2 games. He has 1 catch for 3 yards. I'm thinking part of this, though, Zach, is they just didn't throw the ball that much. To James Franklin's point, there haven't been enough plays to distribute the ball around that much.
And the statistics could look even better if there wasn't the offensive pass interference, right? There were a lot of yards that were left off of the box.
A terrible drop.
Yeah, where Drew Aller could have had, I think, in the neighborhood of 100 more yards. So he threw 200 against Bowling Green. He could have ended up having 300 and maybe a couple other touchdown passes. Again, I think the defense also deserves kind of the similar, we're going to cut you a break because we know that you're a work in progress, right? The offense has a lot to build upon, and they can only take so many steps in the right direction. It can't happen all at once. Andy Kotelnicki's system is complicated. I think that's a fair application to Tom Allen as well, is that you replace both coordinators. So there are going to be some hiccups here and there. We just give a pass to the offense because of how much of a letdown the offense was a season ago. And Manny Diaz's defense was the number one defense in a lot of different categories last year. So that's a lot to live up to. And Penn State's offense has so much to capitalize on because of what, you know, all the lack of success in 2023. Besides the point, though, wide receiver, it still is what it is, and it's going to be what it is. The wide receiver core is good. They're not great. They're not elite. I think people came in with the misconception that Julian Fleming was going to be that complimentary co-star or potential number one wide receiver. And I tried to say on my show, Locked On Nittany Lions, that that's just not the case. Julian Fleming was brought in with the purpose to be on the depth chart. He's going to contribute, but don't anticipate that he's going to be a born-again superstar wide receiver. His blocking is very important in terms of the ground. The wide receiver blocking has been so much better. I know it's 2 games, West Virginia and Bowling Green, but it has been almost night and day in comparison to what it was a season ago. I'm going to give credit to Julian Fleming for coming in and adding that element and making the other players around him better. So that's the point of it, is that Julian Fleming was supposed to make everybody else better around him. And so far, that is happening.
Also, Zach, with the offense, and this is the good news, bad news thing. I think this was an example in this Bowling Green game. Bowling Green wasn't able to stop the Nittany Lions offense. The Nittany Lions were the only ones who could stop their offense. You alluded to some of it, but a drop pass on third down, the offensive pass interference, a holding call that puts him behind the sticks. And candidly, the one bad pass that Drew Aller threw was the interception when they were in the red zone score. Yeah, bad play. But I think we talked about, not necessarily you and I, but I know that we had on our show, and I suspect you did too, that we were looking for Drew Aller to take more chances, gamble a little bit more. Again, we didn't like that pass, but you know what? I'm not that worked up about it. And I had somebody else tell me there was the scramble play where he ended up losing a lot of yardage. Yeah, I would have preferred he had thrown it away. But right. The fact is, it was third down. Okay. It wasn't first down, and now they couldn't come. It was a third down play where he looked for a while like he might have been able to make a play out of it. I actually was not very upset about that at all, to be honest with you.
Jim, the long and short of it is that the offense is now being asked to make plays rather than not make mistakes. If that's how what you want to, that's the biggest difference from 23 to 24. The offense can now go out and make plays and not just avoid mistakes.
Exactly. And that appears to be the changed mindset with the coordinator, the quarterback, and everybody else. And as you mentioned earlier, we're seeing explosive plays. We didn't even get into at all what Catron Allen and Nick Singleton did.
They've been great. Yep.
And I think I counted 8 rushes from the two of them of more than 10 yards. And fair enough, it was 4 from one, 4 from the other. That's the kind of thing we expect from them. And it's great to see. Unfortunately, we're already out of time. When we come back, it'll be Sean Gold from Sean's Take. This has been Zach Seiko. Don't forget, Locked On Nittany Lions. Stick around. We got Sean Gold. He's going to make his picks for the week coming up next.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by Pulp Daddy Beer. Pulp Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer. Built by Penn Staters for Pennsylvania. Look for the green can at your local retailer. And Sean, I'll be a personal advocate for the beer also. Trust me. Try out the Pulp Daddy. You won't regret it. All right. I'm Jim Galante. He's Sean Gold from Sean's Take. Sean, it's time for the picks of the week. Before we get to the picks, though, we got to, unfortunately, review our record from last week. Not a good week, was it?
No, it hasn't been. College football has not been kind to me. I had a good week one in the NFL. College football, though, has been a different story, and this week three needs to change.
Well, I'll tell you what. It's been a tough season to make picks. Early in the season, you got to realize that it's hard to pin down these teams, what you have. And you also get, I think, some of these early games where – the upsets happen, and, well, we saw it with Penn State against Bowling Green. I'm not sure if they played, 10 more times, we would have seen a game similar to what we saw this past week. Bowling Green just played lights out, especially in that first half.
There was legitimate concern that Penn State was going to lose this game. And, you know, after doubting Penn State in week one and last week talking about how their defense was so good and how their defense can carry them, I was disappointed to see their defense just not show up and let Bowling Green drive down the field at will. So it was concerning. I don't want to overreact. I'm almost glad Penn State has the bye week this week because they need to get they need a message that's going to get them back on track for the rest of the season, because week two performance was not okay for where this team should be going this season.
And there seems to even be a trend where there are a lot of teams that underperform. Now, Notre Dame, they really got bitten. They played a MAC team just like Penn State did. They were a huge favorite, and they got outplayed. I don't know if you saw the game, but there were a lot of other teams that underperformed. Oregon, which we're going to talk about. Alabama against South Florida.
And that was a crazy one to watch.
Yeah, one-score game in the fourth quarter. You know, Oregon had issues with Boise State, and there were several other games that fall into that category. So it makes it a little bit tougher to make the picks. Let's take a look at some of the picks from last week. Let's start with where we did well, and we both did well. Texas against Michigan. That was a game I think we both felt pretty good going with the Longhorns.
That was one of the ones where, like you said, I felt great about that game. I loved the read on it. I thought the market way overvalued Michigan. Being in Michigan, I didn't think was as big of a factor as the market made it out to be. And Texas showed that they're for real this year. And, you know, I would absolutely love to see a Texas-Georgia matchup, because I think looking at the scale right now, I don't know if anybody really has that big of a shot against Georgia, but I think Texas may be the one team that has the best chance of taking down Georgia. And it also showed kind of what I think we knew about Michigan. It's a hard transition year for them. They lost a lot, and they're not the same. Offensively and defensively, they're not the same, and that showed big time this week.
October 19th, you get your wish. Georgia plays Texas in the regular season this year.
I didn't realize that was I should have known that was on the schedule, but I'm excited about that one. That gets the juices flowing right now.
Well, even better, it's in Austin. So you could imagine that place is going to be absolutely crazy. But I'm with you. I think Texas really legitimized themselves as it's Georgia, Ohio State, and Texas appears to be right with them. The other game that we both had, we both took Tennessee at North Carolina State. And again, this one just turned into a mismatch. Tennessee looked really good. And it as I said, a mismatch.
It definitely was. And again, the market wasn't really up to speed with what Tennessee's about this year. And, you know, excuse me if I pronounce wrong, Nico Iamaleva, I believe is how you say his last name. He's legit, and he's putting himself in the Heisman contention this year. He's got everything you want in a starting quarterback, and he's leading this Tennessee offense. And we've seen Tennessee have good offenses over the past 3-4 years. This might be their best offense yet, and they look like a more complete team than I think we've seen them in recent years.
And just looking at that Southeast Conference schedule, Tennessee has both Alabama and Georgia on their schedule. Monster games. And again, I think those are games that Alabama and Georgia might be vulnerable against a team like Tennessee.
I completely agree. And with the 12-team format, it's going to be very interesting to see how they shake out. Assuming Tennessee beats everybody but those two teams, if you go 1-1, you're in the playoffs. The question is, can you go 0-2 against those two teams but blow out the rest of your schedule? And if those are close games, what's the committee going to think? You lost to two of the best teams in the country by a very narrow margin. You blew out everybody else. It's going to be really exciting to see how this 12-team format shakes out and how many two-loss teams are there going to be. I don't know what to expect, but you know what? If they play well in those two games, win, lose, or draw, they're going to have a shot at still getting in the playoffs, assuming they handle business the rest of the way.
Me personally, I think if you're Tennessee in the Southeast Conference, you go 10-2 and your only losses are Alabama and Georgia, you're in.
I agree.
You are in. Now, you got to remember, again, playing in the Southeast Conference, they also have a game with Oklahoma. And I think other than that, their schedule is pretty manageable. But Oklahoma actually comes up in a couple weeks. So that's going to be an interesting early game. I'm sure next week when we make our picks, that game will be on the list. All right.
It definitely will.
We got the games that went well for us. Now let's go the other way. Let's start with one of our favorites. We always seem to have Colorado on our list of picks. Colorado was at Nebraska. You went Colorado. This is the one we were different. I took Nebraska partially because of my anti-Deion Sanders, anti-Colorado feeling. And Nebraska just kind of had that feel to me that they might just be legit. That doesn't mean they're national championship contenders or maybe even playoff contenders, but I got the feeling they were legit. They certainly look that way in this game.
Well, you know, Nebraska's having the best quarterback play they've had in a long time, and that's huge for that program. They're in good hands. I'm very frustrated with Colorado because I keep giving them the benefit of the doubt, thinking that they're going to make these improvements week to week, and they're not. The offensive line, I think the conclusion I've come to is Nebraska's defensive line was just a whole lot better than North Dakota State's, because Colorado offense week one looked very good and looked like that unit where, you know what, they can hang with just about anybody. Shedeur Sanders had less than 2 seconds that entire game, and I would be incredibly frustrated if I was him, because he just has zero opportunities to develop a play. And I think that's going to be the moral of the story this entire season for Colorado. They made no fixes on the offensive line, it seems like, and you're not going to be able to win football games or keep scores close if you can't protect your quarterback for more than 2 seconds.
Okay, let's go. Another one that you and I had wrong. We both had Oregon against Boise State. Oregon was favored by 18, 19 points in this game. And boy, it was close again. Is it time for us to rethink this Oregon team?
You know, it's really hard to read. And we've got a very interesting matchup that we'll be talking about soon with Oregon State. It took me a while to jump to a conclusion on that one, but very disappointed in what Oregon's doing as well. And I don't know what's going on with coaching, because Dan Lanning had that team locked in last season, and it feels different this year in Oregon. And it's concerning. Both offensively, they still got to get things going better, but defensively is where I'm really concerned right now.
It's you gave them the benefit of the doubt. You did. We all did. We gave them the benefit of the doubt that first week. Now, if you have two games in a row that are concerning, you start to wonder, is this a trend? I mentioned earlier about, does Texas belong with the Georgia and Ohio State? When the season began, a lot of people were thinking Oregon belonged there. After these first two games, definitely does not seem to be the case. Another game I felt pretty good about was Iowa State at Iowa. You and I both had Iowa. They were a 2.5-point favorite. I felt pretty good about this because I thought, hey, this is still – it's Iowa on defense. But did they figure out a little something on offense? They didn't have to be great. They didn't even have to be good. They just had to be average. And that would make Iowa, I think, a much better team. We didn't see it in this one versus Iowa State.
No, we didn't. And I don't regret that pick at all. I loved taking Iowa in that situation. And just talk about a second half collapse. Up 13-0 at halftime, I was feeling pretty good about that they'd be able to get another touchdown. Their defense looked great in the first half. And then just the wheels started to come off the train right there. So another frustrating one to see, and just major implications for Iowa's chance to get to the college football playoffs. I believe they have Ohio State on their schedule. They're not going to beat them if, one, the offense doesn't improve more, and two, if the defense isn't going to hold up to standard. So halftime adjustments were made very poorly in that game, and you know it's a big loss for them.
We talked earlier about Tennessee making the playoffs with two losses, say, to Alabama and Georgia. Just to talk in terms of, I think there'll have to be a tiebreaker perhaps at two losses. And then Iowa, with the two losses being Ohio State, that I fear could be a blowout, and the loss to Iowa State, that's the kind of two loss that I think could keep you from making the playoffs. All right. And finally, in our picks last week, we both had the Nittany Lions. You thought that they would try to demonstrate that they belong in the playoffs. Me, I was counting on James Franklin trying to run up the score. Boy, they weren't even close to covering.
No, neither happened. And, you know, as we said earlier, it's a good time for a bye week for them because they got to do some soul searching and figure this out quick.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I think, I don't want to say we underestimated Bowling Green, but I think they were a real example of where the transfer portal, and especially a transfer portal quarterback who's his sixth year and had experience in both the Southeast Conference and in the Big Ten, boy, his maturity, his accuracy, it all showed up in this game and really frustrated that Penn State defense, at least through the first half. It was good to see some adjustments made in the second half, but I'll tell you what, after that first half, yeah, I still have some concerns about that Penn State defense there, Sean. All right, that is it for looking back. Next quarter, we're going to look forward, make our picks for this coming week. Stay tuned for that.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Sean Gold. I'm Jim Galante. We are ready to make our Pulp Daddy picks for the week. Pulp Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer, built by Penn Staters for Pennsylvania. Look for the green can at your local retailer. Trust me, I don't advocate for a beer that I haven't tried. Love it. Love their Pulp Daddy. They have a lot of great other beers. Start with the Pulp Daddy, though. Okay, we got to get to our Pulp Daddy picks, though, Sean. Ready for a big week this week?
Let's do it. Let's get it done.
All right, let's do this. Let's start with LSU at South Carolina. I think both of us were pretty high on LSU at the start of the year. They had their opener with USC, a disappointment there. They are playing at South Carolina, pretty good South Carolina team. LSU is a 7-point favorite in this one.
Yeah, we talked about that tough week one loss. They then beat Nicholls State 44-21. Wasn't overly impressive, but they got the job done. They did what they were supposed to do. And I think this team still has a lot of potential. We have to remember, you lose Jaden Daniels to the draft. You lose Terrence Marshall to the draft. Two of your best players are gone. It's not super easy to rebound after that, but this is still a good program. And what I looked at, if they pick up six straight wins, they'll be going into a Week 11 matchup at home versus Alabama with a 7-1 record. A win here can set up a lot for LSU moving forward. We know they're a good program. I think they figure some more things out, take a step forward, and get a double-digit victory here.
I was kind of going back and forth on this one. I think some people are starting to be high on this South Carolina team. I think that might be a little bit of an overreaction to them, though, Sean. And LSU, I think there's the reaction on the negative side after that USC game. I'm going to go with LSU also. I think that it's the fact that it's just that one score, 7 points. I just feel like LSU will win by at least 7 in this one. All right, here's the next one. This one's I'm really fascinated by, and that's Oregon at Oregon State. Rivalry game. Oregon landed on their feet in the Big Ten. Oregon State, not so much. This is really – Oregon State has to have this game circled on their schedule. And even though Oregon is a 16.5-point favorite in this one, Oregon has disappointed so far. Oregon State, this has got to be like their biggest game of the season. How do you see this one going?
This is a really tough one. Oregon obviously has been disappointing. And I also don't really love what I'm seeing from Oregon State. They're 2-0, but nothing to me has been overly impressive. Oregon State lost a lot in the transfer portal, and this team is not what they were last season. So initially, I thought I'd be locking in on Oregon State with the home field advantage because they historically have covered spreads at home incredibly well. But in the end, I just can't get myself to back them. Maybe Oregon figures it out this week. that's where my prediction is going to go. This team has so much talent. I'm hoping that internally they're figuring things out. They're getting some momentum in that locker room to build up for this game. So it's a really tough one, but I just trust this Oregon team a lot more than I trust Oregon State. So I got to roll with the Ducks here.
I'm going to go the other way on this one because we now have a couple games from Oregon where they underperformed. And I think this one is Oregon State is at home, not just a rivalry game, but I think it's a bitter rivalry game right now. The bitterness on the Oregon State side, I think if there's ever a time they would really be up for a game, this is it. And I'm also quite a bit influenced by that spread, 16.5 points. I mean, Oregon could be a 2-touchdown winner in this one and still not cover that spread. So I'm going to go with Oregon State in this one. That 16.5 points, that's just too many points for me, considering the way Oregon has played in their first two games. Okay, next up, Notre Dame at Purdue. I think, a couple weeks ago, we were all pretty high on Notre Dame. They took down Texas A&M on the road. You and I both were high on A&M in that game. Notre Dame prevailed. But then they just threw in a stinker last week, Northern Illinois. We could, as Penn State fans, could look at Penn State and be disappointed on how they played. They made adjustments in the second half on defense, found a way to win the game, win and survive, win and advance. Notre Dame, not the same way. Now they're playing at Purdue, and Notre Dame is a 10.5 point favorite in this one.
Yeah, what a brutal loss last week. And after going into week one, I was all saying they're overrated, A&M's going to win, and then they proved me wrong there, or so I thought. Then when I'm saying, you know what, I got to give this team their credit, they go out and lay an egg and lose to Northern Illinois. In the end for this matchup, I think their defense is going to rebound and be good enough to cover the spread for them. I don't love Notre Dame at all, but I also don't love Purdue. So I think Purdue's going to have a tough matchup. Notre Dame is going to come into this game hot. They know they screwed up. They want to get back at that. And I think they need to try to make a statement in this game. So I'm by no means am I huge on this Notre Dame team, but I do think they can get a 10.5 point win in this one.
I'm kind of with you on this, and I hate to ever go with Notre Dame. However, with that said, Notre Dame, a lot of folks think, okay, they eliminated themselves from the playoffs. I don't think they have, and their schedule the rest of the way is very manageable. Their biggest game left is USC, okay? That Florida State game doesn't look nearly as daunting as it did when the season started. So I think the mindset for Notre Dame is we take care of business. We're still in the playoffs, especially if we go 11-1. We could probably get a home playoff game out of this. Take care of business. Recover from last week's debacle. 10.5 points. I don't like that extra half point, but I could see Notre Dame even struggling and maybe winning this game by 13 points, maybe even with a late score. They don't have to be at the top of their game to still beat Purdue by double digits. So grudgingly, holding my nose, I'm going with Notre Dame also in that one, Sean. So we both went that way. All right, we still got to talk about our good buddies at Colorado. We did this last year. Seems like we're following that tradition. Love them, hate them. You got to pay attention to the Colorado Buffaloes. They are playing a rivalry game. They are at Colorado State. To be honest, I don't know much about Colorado State. Do we know enough about Colorado to make the bet based on that? Colorado is a 7.5 point favorite in this one.
Yeah, you know, I think this may be the first time on this show, I can't remember from last year, that I'm going to go against the Buffaloes. The offensive line just, it simply is not fixed. And there's nothing else really to say about this team. This is a winnable game for either of these teams. But without an offensive line, I can't keep rolling with Colorado. So, you know, this will probably be the week that their offensive line plays just about perfectly and looks like an NFL offensive line out there. And and they'll get a blowout week just to try to prove me wrong after I've been supporting them for so long. But, you know, until they figure things out, I can't keep rolling with Colorado. So, like I said, I think either team has an actual shot at winning this game. So I'm going to go with the underdog here in Colorado State.
Well, what's interesting is I typically have been going against Colorado, and that's been a winner for me, okay? Nebraska was just playing the better team. North Dakota State played well enough to stay with them. I just think this might be one of those crazy games where it's competitive. Colorado State is in the game with them, but Colorado just finds a way to put up enough points. They may not play well, but I could see them winning this game like, you know, 38-30, you know, in a game like that where they can just get enough offense. Again, holding my nose while I do it, I'm going to take the Buffaloes in that one. All right, let's see. A couple more games. We got BC at Missouri. Missouri, a favorite of a lot of folks coming into this season. BC, a surprise. They beat Florida State. I know that's not the same as we may have thought, but still for Bill O'Brien to get that win on Florida State. And BC is getting 16.5 points in this one.
It's probably a little more points than I would like to see. But I will say, I don't think at this point Boston College beating Florida State is really that big of a deal. We've seen how Florida State has played. So if you told me in the beginning of the season BC beats Florida State, I would have been pretty high on them. But after watching Florida State these first couple weeks, they're just not that great of a football team. So at home to start SEC play, I'm going to take Missouri here. I don't love the point total, but I do trust them more than I trust BC. And Missouri's got a lot to play for. They were building things last year, and they have picked up with a lot of momentum this season. And I mean, they're playing good football. I'm not going to go against them right now.
Well, Missouri has started the season with Murray State and Buffalo. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. I think BC, I think Bill O'Brien might look to control the ball, limit the number of possessions here. And as much as I think Missouri will win this game, they're the better team, I think BC's got a little bit of magic going with them right now. I look for BC not to win, but to cover this by Bill O'Brien, again, trying to reduce the number of possessions in this game, hold on to the ball, get those long drives going. He may lose by two touchdowns, but that's enough. I'm going to go with BC in this one. Finally, Sean, we have Arizona at Kansas State. Kansas State, a 7.5-point favorite at home.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a high-scoring game. I think Kansas ball is going to run the ball effectively. I think Arizona should be able to get their superstar wide receiver McMillan back involved. He was held to 2 catches for 11 yards last week. We got to remember week one, he had 304 receiving yards. He may be the best receiver in college football. I think he bounces back. I think they get him involved. And I think Arizona can throw the ball in this game. So with a spread pick on this one, I really think either team is capable of winning this game. So I'm going to take another underdog here and go with Arizona to cover. I think it could be a shootout, but I think Arizona's got a shot at winning this game if they get the ball last. So I'm going to go with Arizona to cover the spread here.
I think this, I'm going with Kansas State, and some of this, it may appear I'm just going the other way than you, but I think Kansas State is actually the better team here. I think they have aspirations to win the Big 12. They're going to have to win games like this. They're at home. I don't like that extra half point over the touchdown, but I'm still going to go with Kansas State in this one. All right, Sean, that's it for our picks. Fingers crossed we have a better week this week. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.